This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina and I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett and I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And my name is Zach Valenti, your third Bad Ideas host.
And this is the show where one person enters with a bad idea, two other people enter and then listen to that bad idea. They talk about it for 10 minutes, and then the three of them leave after having talked about it. Okay, yeah, this is not as catchy as the Thunderdome.
And then
thing.
We do it again, and then yes. A different person enters, and the yes. Same two people are there. Yeah,
that's so. The one.
And hopefully we spin these horrible news stories into something at least entertaining.
We got to turn this into a chant, guys. I think it's got real chant potential.
This is what No Bad Ideas looks like.
But no, without any further preamble, why don't we step into the Thunderdome with our first bad idea?
Yeah, Zach, you have it, that, right?
That's right. And boy, is this a depressing one, you guys.
Hooray.
Yeah, that's what I love for the comedy show. The
As depression. We said, champions. Champion ideas this week.
Straight from a news source, revealnews.org. I will hold on to the headline, which frankly is relevant, and it just... This is one idea that does not quit.
Okay.
I don't know if I like the sound of that.
Link in the show notes, as always. Quote, it was a slave camp, says one man sent to a chicken processing plant run by Christian alcoholics and addicts in recovery, where unpaid workers handle chickens that go to Walmart, KFC, and Popeyes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
The worst day of Brad McGahee's life was the day a judge decided to spare him from prison. McGahee was 23 with dreams of making it big in rodeo, maybe starring in his own reality show. With a 1.5 GPA, he'd barely graduated from high school. He had two kids and mounting child support debt. Then he got busted for buying a stolen horse trailer, fell behind on court fines, and blew off his probation officer.
Wow, this is a whole ass country song.
Yeah.
In a bad way. This poor man.
Standing in a tiny wood-paneled courtroom in rural Oklahoma in 2010, he faced 1 year in state prison. The judge had another plan. Quote, you need to learn work ethic, the judge told him. I'm sending you to CARE.
I hate this.
Cue the least caring place with an acronym of that word. McGahee had heard of Christian alcoholics and addicts in recovery. People called it, quote, the chicken farm, a rural retreat where defendants stayed for a year, got addiction treatment, and learned to live more productive lives. Most were sent there by courts from across Oklahoma and neighboring states, part of the nationwide push to keep nonviolent offenders out of prison. Aside from daily cans of Dr. Pepper, McGahee wasn't addicted to anything. The judge knew that, but the chicken farm sounded better than prison. A few weeks later, McGahee stood in front of a speeding conveyor belt inside a frigid poultry plant, pulling guts and stray feathers from slaughtered chicken destined for major fast food restaurants and grocery stores. There wasn't much substance abuse treatment at CARE. It was mostly factory work for one of America's top poultry companies. If McGahee got hurt or worked too slowly, his bosses threatened him with prison. And he worked for free. CARE pocketed the pay. Quote, it was a slave camp, McGahee said. I can't believe the court sent me there.
I mean, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The rest of the article details the horrors of this effective indentured servitude that is masquerading as an addiction recovery program, and talks about the $1.4 billion annual revenue company, Simon's Foods, which employs the about 200 men living on the sprawling grassy compound in northeastern Oklahoma called, the acronym being CARE.
Yeah.
And it talks about just the notoriously dangerous and understaffed chicken processing plants, how the men's hands often get stuck in horrible maiming accidents when they're not getting burned with acid. It's just pretty nightmarish. And I think at this point, you have enough details to maybe make this more cheery. Maybe not. But let's find out.
No, I think we just need to destroy it. Like,
yeah. Because
this is just, it's just bad. This is just Dickens level poorhouse work. It is a slave camp. We should, it's bad. Just very bad.
Yeah.
And with that, I'm giving you guys 10 minutes on Ye Old Timer.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about like how to turn this into something that could be remotely called fun. Because I mean, like the first thing that comes to mind about how to adapt this into something is like that like subgenre of movies from the 70s, like Papillon and those kinds of movies that are just basically like, these men are sent to like a horrible prison that is designed to break their spirit. Let's watch them for 2.5 hours of agonizing prison existence as they try to escape. And I think that like, you know, and like we could do that with something like this and it would just be 2 hours of agonizing existence.
Adam Driver is down, by the way.
Adam Driver would be down. Oh my God. He'd be good in that.
He would.
So yeah. To offer a potentially useful reference in which we can cast Adam Driver. Have y'all ever seen or heard of THX-1138?
Yes.
I know that it exists, but I don't know. And I know that it is like George Lucas's early film, but I know nothing about it beyond that.
Yeah, this is basically his calling card before he went off to make the Star Wars movies. And it sort of just opens without a lot of context in a bizarre future world where everybody lives in a very regimented sort of fixed way, not unlike A Brave New World, the novel. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's one of those sort of sci-fi dystopian films that forces you to keep up with it. It's not going to stop and be like in a world. Mm-hmm. You're just in it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And a lot of things are unclear and just sort of suggested. So I could imagine maybe extrapolating into the future where instead of like a poultry plant with live chickens, it's like a lab grown meat facility where, you know, people are sort of on a strict schedule and, you know, there's like where they're at the plant where things are everybody's in hazmat suits and, you know, using like very complex looking science equipment and everybody's sort of sweating and trying not to like, you know, make anything go off. And then there's like the sort of group therapy time and then like life in the quarters, whatever their, you know, sort of barracks are like. And it could be an, you know, sort of an escape story.
Yeah. And like, it's still punishment. Like it's still like somebody does something bad and gets sentenced to go to this place.
Good question. I think that is very much on the table and would be a solid default. It could also just be like, this is where we live as a species. You're either born to the underclass or, you know, the overclass.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that interests me because like, you know, if you read about the way forced labor has worked, especially in the American context for like the past 400 years, it kind of looks like this. There is a kind of polemic out there that I don't know that we are the right people to produce of just like the more things change, the more they stay the same. And the legal system is adapted to ensure that like there is labor for cheap chickens at Walmart. So if we are going to extrapolate it out into sort of a sci-fi context, which allows for there to be cool future technology shit, but also sort of lets modern society off the hook a little bit for the ways in which the systems that we have set up fail people. I kind of want it to be everybody or for it to be like a super towner. I'm so sorry, but like, that's kind of my instinct of just like they try to escape, but there is none.
I'm down.
We're back to Adam Driver, basically.
Right. I think maybe the move there is like, let's say they succeed in getting out and like, you know, sort of that iconic last shot can be borrowed and adapted from the Planet of the Apes movie where they get out and it's just a goddamn wasteland. And like the Statue of Liberty is like, you know, coming out of the sand.
Sorry.
No, go for it.
Yeah. I mean, I dig anything that steals from Planet of the Apes. Excellent stuff. The other thing I'm realizing we could do is sort of a very twisted version of Sullivan's Travels, where instead of Joel McRae being a Hollywood producer who ends up on a chain gang and learns to be a little bit less snooty, you have someone who is like behind this CARE movement or whatever horrible acronym who... through fluke misfortune ends up in one of these facilities and sort of has to deal with what they have wrought.
That's interesting.
And try and bring it out on from the inside.
I like that. Like that, I think, was the hook that I was missing of just like, who is the person and what is the perspective that they're bringing into this? And yeah.
Let me make sure I got this straight. So an executive, like somebody responsible for building this nightmare, yes, ends up having to live through it.
Or like a, yes, either someone on sort of the corporate side or like someone in the, like the clerk for a judge who sends people to this place ends up being sent there or something like that.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
And I think that there needs to be some slight contrivance of like, you know, they're responsible for the system in the States and during a visit to, or, you know, future the States, you know, 2499 the States.
But then when they end up on Mars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like when they go and visit Mars, which has like its sister program that has been like, you know, designed off of the same system, but doesn't have the same shared paperwork. When all of a sudden it's like, no, don't arrest me. I'm Marcus Hamilton. Everyone is like, we don't fucking care. Like,
right,
you know,
right.
Get in line. You know, you're out past curfew. You're in the no zone.
Yeah.
Right. I just to maybe pull the drug connotations along with it, like on Earth spent a career locking people up for methamphetamine use, all the while being a legal opioid user, only to vacation to Mars and like get caught for what is on Mars an illegal supply of opium and then thrown into the same shitty system that they maintain on Earth.
With that said, I will push for him being like, I don't know if we would call them like a prison warden or something like this, like someone that is actually involved in the facilities themselves rather than someone in the court. Because I think that what then that allows is that this will be now be someone that is
knows the ins and outs.
Exactly. That will be able to kind of like manipulate the system a little bit, like, you know, like he will be out of his depth and like, you know, brutalized by the system. But there will be some element of like you will be able to try to see them kind of try to find the ways to intellectually talk and exert whatever pressures they can to get themselves out of this situation. Ultimately, by the way, I don't think successfully. Like, ultimately, I think like getting very close to getting out and then ultimately getting shot or ground up into chicken meat or genetically transformed into a chicken. I don't know what the like worst, what the fate for the like repeat worst offenders is in a place like this. But, you know, like, I think like he ultimately succumbs. But, you know, I think that if it is just kind of like a corrupt law clerk, they would get like crushed by the system. And I don't think that that's a match that is as interesting to watch as someone that would be falling from a position of authority, but still able to kind of know how to maneuver in the space.
And if we want to lighten it a little bit, it could be like they fall and are crushed by the wheel. But give the space for someone else to escape.
I like that. Someone that is there much more, that deserves it a lot less.
Exactly.
So what I'm getting is that the person that the story maybe focuses on, the protagonist, is somebody that knows the staff room code that has not been changed since like the facility has been built, and like knows where the, you know, the air vent system lets out, like that kind of stuff, so that they can pull.
I think it's like even a little bit more general, because again, I don't think that it can be in a prison that they've run, because they would be like, oh, we have that picture of that guy up in the, like, you know, rec room or whatever.
Yeah, no, he would know Larry and Mo, the guards and stuff.
But what he can know is like, oh, I know that the guards are only paid this amount of money. So like, you know, don't bother bribing that guard. He's well paid, but like, you know, bribe the like laundry ordinance guy. Mm-hmm. Like that guy only gets paid like this little amount of money.
Right. And yeah, he can't let us out, but he can get us into the fertilizer where we can use to build explosives.
And if I know like these cheapskates, and I have been one of these cheapskates, like, you know, they're supposed to throw the fertilizer out every 6 months, but like nobody actually does that. So I bet that there's like a bunch of old fertilizer and that shit only gets more potent over time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And with that, et cetera, that's time.
That's it.
But I'm curious where you were going with that before we break on this idea.
Yeah, no, like there's nothing that is like, you know, like he doesn't know anything that would let them get out in the same night. Like there isn't anything that is as simple as like, boop, 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 boop. The password is gargoyle. And also, you know, talk to Gary. He'll let us out. But it's sort of something that like it's just enough like little advantages that over the course of like, say, 6 months, a real plan could come together.
Now, what's the song? What's the escape from prison movie from, like, is that the one with a da 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 da? Okay, great.
That's the Great Escape.
Yeah, so it's the Great Escape of the future.
All right.
Well, except the Great Escape, is like all these like kind of cartoonally patriotic and awesome like British and American troops, whereas this would be like, you know, like the equivalent of like a Nazi that gets thrown into the labor camp in the Great Escape world. So I mean, it is interesting.
Yeah, very different vibe.
Yeah,
but an interesting one. So we'll have to go away and think about it and hammer this out a little bit more.
This would for sure need a good musical theme, though. I'm with you on that.
It
needs
absolutely
a strong
would.
Musical theme.
Yeah.
And for anyone who cares, we should shut down CARE.
Yes. Seriously, yes. It sounds awful.
What a nightmare.
It's awful.
Thank you both for making a story that is much more entertaining, and hopefully we'll shed some light on this bullshit. But without further ado, we're going to go take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more No Bad Ideas. Hello there, Zach Valenti jumping into this episode with this brief reminder that we have an active Patreon page to support the production of No Bad Ideas and all the other crazy worlds we're building behind the scenes. To check that out, scope the sweet rewards we offer for monthly subscriptions, as well as how to sign up yourself. Head on over to nobadideaspodcast.com/support. Once more, that's nobadideaspodcast.com/support. If you already support the show, we so appreciate that. And regardless, thank you for listening. All right, let's get back to more No Bad Ideas.
All right, we have some feelers out to Howard Shore and Bear McCreary about coming up with that great theme. But in the meanwhile, I have another idea for you both. It also involves the penal system, so this is going to be a little bit of a bummer, but is not quite as intense.
Yikes.
Possibly because it's coming from England. So this idea, which, dear listeners, if you would like to read along, a link will be in the episode description, comes from Leicestershire Live, the Leicestershire Mercury's website. And I will read the headline because it is all there, and we'll go from there. We start strong. White supremacist sentenced to read Pride and Prejudice and other literary classics. So
okay, Is it so that they can learn empathy by being exposed to like other people's worldviews?
Well, let me read the piece.
Okay.
A young Nazi sympathizer who downloaded bomb-making instructions has been sentenced to read classic novels, including Pride and Prejudice, instead. Judge Timothy Spencer, QC, told Ben John, 21, that he could stay out of prison as long as he steered clear of white supremacy literature and read books and plays by Jane Austen, William Shakespeare, Thomas Hardy, and Charles Dickens. I think we could probably spice up that list of authors, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
The former De Montfort University student will have to return to the court every 4 months to be tested on his reading by the judge after avoiding jail, quote, by the skin of his teeth. John had first been identified as a terror risk days after his 18th birthday and was referred to the PREVENT program, but carried on downloading, quote, repellent right-wing documents, as well as a manual with which contained bomb-making instructions. On August 11th of this year, he was found guilty by a jury of possessing information likely to be useful for preparing an act of terror. The court heard the conviction had a maximum jail sentence of 15 years, but Judge Spencer concluded his crime was likely to be, quote, an act of teenage folly and an isolated incident. He told John at the sentencing hearing, "You are a lonely individual with few, if any, true friends." He added John was highly susceptible to...
Thanks, Judge.
Keeping it real. He added John was highly susceptible to recruitment by others more prone to action, but said, quote, "I am not of the view that harm was likely to have been caused." He made John promise him not to research any more right-wing materials. The judge then asked him, "Have you read Dickens? Austin, start with Pride and Prejudice and Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities, Shakespeare's Twelfth Night. Think about Hardy. Think about Trollope. On January 4th, you will tell me what you have read and I will test you on it. I will test you. And if I think you are lying to me, you will suffer. I will be watching you, Ben John, every step of the way.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Intense judge.
You will know what will happen." He then told John's barrister, Harry Bentley, he has by the skin of his teeth avoided imprisonment. There is a lot more to this article about this young man's previous fringe anti-Semitic and National Socialist activities online. You can read that or not if you know you want to avoid doing that. But I have explained to you the heart of the matter. A budding right-wing extremist is being told to read books or else. And so I will put 10 minutes on a timer, and I would love for you guys to take this idea further.
You know, so quick sidebar here that I promised links up this pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I was listening to, I think it was last week, I was listening to This American Life, and they had what was one of the most interesting stories that I'd ever heard on their show. And it was about this woman who ran as rehabilitation therapy theater for people in like maximum security prisons.
Oh, I have heard this. It's a very, very good story.
And specifically, they were doing a production of Hamlet that was most of the people in the cast were people who had actually killed people.
Mm-hmm.
And there was sort of this like real charge of kind of like, you know, what happens when you are watching this performance of Hamlet and the character of Hamlet as he, you know, sort of like runs through these long monologues where he's considering whether he should kill someone or not. What happens when that monologue is being said by someone who has actually taken a life? And it was really, really fascinating. And it spoke a lot to kind of what role art has in kind of interfacing and bringing together different parts of society. So I kind of love this idea of like there being this mandatory art engagement program. And I like this more as a movie. I think that has some questions in terms of how it's being applied in real life, to be clear.
I
love this idea of, you know, it's a movie about someone that is maybe like Eggsy at the start of the first Kingsman movie. Just kind of like, mm-hmm, a little bit of a rebel without a cause, a little bit of like a vandal with too much destructive energy, too much kind of just like restlessness. He, you know, smashes the wrong mailboxes, ends up in front of the judge. And then the judge kind of tells him, you know, we are doing the like troubled youth, guys and dolls. congratulations, you're in the musical now, you know, and like, if you don't want to go to juvie, you're going to go to the musical and it's going to be great. And sort of seeing him and this other group of kind of, you know, ne'er-do-well youngsters have to kind of come together and do this like theatrical production. That would be sort of my pitch on how to do something like this.
I dig it. For something a little bit more psychedelic, have either of you seen Maniac, the Netflix series starring Emma Stone and Jonah Hill?
I have not.
Okay. No. I had to stop because it was making me feel nauseous. Not in a, like it was made badly way, but just in like, this is like, I don't know, triggering something in my brain.
Sure. This
like,
is not what you need to be watching need right now. Moment.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure.
To not spoil anything, but just pull like a sci-fi mechanism that will enable storytelling. They are in like a medical trial that like lets them kind of cross wires and kind of be in the same shared dream space together.
Hmm.
And so I'm imagining like, and maybe Ready Player One is another good pull for this, which is like a VR sci-fi novel that got adapted by Steven Spielberg. The idea basically being these at-risk white supremacist youths are forced to live as characters from novels that will hopefully make them less horribly racist.
Interesting.
And like can have sort of weird, trippy, subjective moments where they're looking in the mirror and like seeing a face that's not theirs that kind of is like melting into their face, you know, just like all the weird stuff that can happen once you start messing with subjectivity in this way.
So I like it. I want to pull out a couple threads there.
Cool. And feel free to throw this away. We can, you know, jump back.
I'm curious to map this out a little bit further at least. Yeah. Just kind of do a little bit of cartography here. So basically when they kind of, you know, like when young Gustav gets put into Elizabeth Bennet's perspective in Pride and Prejudice, do they have free will or are they on rails? Like, you know, if like, cause like Pride and Prejudice begins, oh, daughters, good fortune. We're going to the ball that Mr. Bingsley is throwing. And Gustav is like, no, I'm not. Walks out the door. All of a sudden, the plot of Pride and Prejudice doesn't happen. So is it something where they have to kind of go to certain story designated events or the program won't let them exit for the day, or like kind of how much free will are they retaining?
That's a really good question. My gut instinct, and Sarah, I'd be really curious to hear where you would take this if you see anything other than this, but like my immediate response is Groundhog's Day, where it's like if they say the wrong thing or don't follow the story path, they're booted back up at the beginning.
At the beginning of the day or whatever, yeah. Like until the last checkpoint to start right. The chapter.
Exactly.
Interesting. Sarah, what do you think?
That is interesting. I like that. I like that because that's where the punishment really lies, is having to repeat the same thing and not have any forward progress. I am a little bit curious whether this is like, whether it's stuff like Pride and Prejudice, or if they're put into sort of story paths that are designed to help build empathy, but aren't necessarily like Hamlet or Romeo and Juliet or something, and are original, or are they sort of given sort of the out of, oh, I know how this story is supposed to work. I know what choices are the right ones and I can either make them or not. Or are they put into like, you know, instead of being in Lizzie Bennet, they're put into a VR version of the movie Belle.
Or into like Americana, the Ngozi Adichie novel.
Yeah, exactly. And are sort of forced to have a very different perspective that they would not necessarily know in advance.
Mm-hmm. I think there may be something to the creative limitation of pulling from existing works, but I think giving ourselves the freedom to pick better works and ones that would maybe work more effectively for this program than literary classics.
Yeah, I'm fascinated, I have to admit, by the judge's decision to do these particular things, because it sounds less like it sounds less like it's coming from a place of you need to do that thing that literature is so wonderful at, which is that it kind of engages your empathy sensors and lets you see the world through the eyes of another person and thus kind of come away as a richer, more fulfilled individual. It sounds like it's less that and more like What you need is a proper British education. Yeah, that will set you straight. Time to direct you to the canon. And once you have read those, you will be a proper British gentleman. I don't even know what accent that was, but I think it gets my point across.
Yeah. It does. No, the reading list is sus. For sure.
As in suspect?
God bless you, Sarah. It's what the Zoomers are saying, Gabrielle.
I see. As an old, I'm here looking out for you, any fellow old listeners.
Which is nothing against Pride and Prejudice. It's a wonderful book and does build empathy because they're idiots.
Yeah, I don't know what the Thomas Hardy's going to do, to be honest.
I don't know what the Thomas Hardy's going to do for you.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would start with Twelfth Night either, but that's neither here nor there.
But okay, whatever. We can.
But we could. I hear you, Zach, about there's something to pulling from a story that is kind of known in popular culture and having the limitations of that, because the audience then expects things that can be subverted or not. But it shouldn't be Pride
Which
and Prejudice.
Which I think kind of means, I think that it needs to kind of then be like a Christmas Carol.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. I dig that. The other upside of pulling from existing works is we can get a deserving author a healthy paycheck for licensing their shit.
Right. And it's tough because it is the thing that you are saying, Sarah, of like the moment that it is you are taking a character and they have to now go through another story. You're immediately forking the narrative experience into like the movie that is going to play for the people that know the existing story and kind of can see the twists coming and the people who can't. And so I think that, you know, like we kind of have to make a choice about whether it is, if it is going to be something that is going to be known, then I think we need to err on the side of it needs to be like the most known thing. Like it needs to be sort of something that even people who haven't read the fucking thing could kind of give you a pretty good summary of it and like the details of it to the point that I think that even Pride and Prejudice doesn't quite
get there. Yeah.
Or alternatively, it needs to be something that is like very unknown and or possibly like entirely made up. It doesn't need to be a novel even. It could just be like, we're going to put you through like an empathy training program.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and like the and it's, program it's begins, like the Matrix, you make enough right bit. Choices and you're back to like the first day. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's time.
On that cliffhanger.
I mean, I guess we have sort of two solid options to explore here. But I like this idea of sort of having people get put in an empathy machine, because that is what literature does at its best.
Right.
Fuck yeah. Great idea. I mean, you know.
Great bad idea.
Yeah, misspent youth.
It's a good bad idea. There we go.
Truly some of the best of the worst.
Which is what we live for here.
That's right.
Cool. Well, thank you guys so much for that. I'm intrigued to see what more could come of it. Both champion ideas this week for sure, and we'll be back for more next week.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our idealist members, Jennifer Schneider, Rena Sarame, and Rebecca Allen. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.